Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Shuttle Pod, the TrekMovie.com podcast. I'm Kayla, along here with cohorts.
This is Jared.
And this is Brian. Good to be here.
Star Trek is not the only new science fiction movie that's going to be coming out pretty soon. Of course, in just a couple of short weeks, we have Star Wars: The Force Awakens to look forward to. Star Trek and Star Wars have always been sort of sister franchises to one another, playing off each other throughout the years, and we wanted to take a look at not only the Star Wars franchise, but how Star Trek and Star Wars have worked together and worked apart over the last several decades, sort of in the landscape of science fiction in general. And I'm sure a lot of you have already purchased your tickets to the upcoming film. Have you guys bought your tickets yet?
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I was up in the middle of the night trying to get them.
Opening night?
No, believe it or not opening night. I couldn't get off for it, but I am Saturday night in New York City, believe it or not, is a little difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
But I got them.
Good for you.
What about you guys?
I'm going that Saturday day with my brother and my nephew.
Yeah, I'll be going early the week after it comes out, so I won't be able to go see it Thursday or Friday.
Well, I suspect they'll probably suffer from not getting the extra revenue that we'd no doubt add.
Oh, yeah.
Sell your Disney stock.
Yes. Well, I should have done that a few days ago, actually, before they lost all their... Anyway, that's another topic. So, today is December 3rd, so we're about 2 weeks out. And we did want to take some time to compare the franchises. Not that we're certainly the first people to ever do that. It's certainly not groundbreaking territory for nerds on the internet to be comparing Star Trek and Star Wars. But we wanted to do it from more the standpoint of how the two have fed off each other. And we've written up this timeline, which we'll post on the website so you can download it and look at it if you're not looking at it already, to go along with us. Because something that we'd noticed as we'd look through this was how the two had basically alternated times when they were successful. Of course, Star Wars didn't come around until Star Trek had already been in existence for several years. The TOS started in 1966, and then the first Star Wars movie was in 1977. And then they sort of alternated years with movies, with the motion picture coming out in 79, then Empire Strikes Back came out in 1980, Wrath of Khan came out in 1982, Return of the Jedi came out in 1983, Search for Spock came out in 1984. I noticed an interesting thing as I was looking at this timeline, and it comes about in 1986, which is, of course, when Star Trek The Voyage Home was released, which was the most successful, until the 2009 reboot, that was the most successful film that in the Star Trek franchise. It's the one that had the broadest appeal. It drew in more fans into the theater than it ever before. And then, of course, Voyage Home also, the financial success there is what really spurred the idea of doing the second TV show, which Next Generation came out the year following. And at that same time that the Voyage Home came out, the only thing that was happening on the Star Wars franchise front were like the Ewok television movies and the Ewok and droids cartoons. And so there's this complete, strategic shift at that point, where Star Trek is becoming more successful with mass audiences, and Star Wars is limiting its appeal to kids. And so you had people who may have grown up with the Star Wars franchise who, you know, if you were a kid and you saw Empire Strikes Back in the theater or whatever, by the time 6 years later that all they're showing is these cartoons, you're probably not as drawn into that franchise anymore, because it's you know, for eight-year-olds, it's not for you anymore. But then, lo and behold, there's this revitalized Star Trek franchise that turns out to be even more successful than the original TV show had been. And so then, at that point, from 1987 on, we see this tremendous domination on TV, and then with a few movies as well, of Star Trek The Next Generation, and then Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise and so forth. And of course, we have the prequels coming out at the same time, and there's the special editions. But there's an interesting thing we also saw in the timeline here, where in 2005, both of the franchises hit rock bottom. We've got Enterprise goes off the air, gets canceled. First Star Trek television show canceled in 30 years. And then Revenge of the Sith, which while people said it was, you know, the best of the prequels, was not a crowd pleaser and does not have a great legacy. And then something else happened in 2005, though, as we see these two big franchises begin to contract, which is the advent of some other TV science fiction franchises. We've got the rise of Battlestar Galactica, which I think we can all agree was very successful commercially and critically. The Serenity, the movie based on the Firefly TV show, which captured a lot of hearts. And then I think most importantly, we see the revitalization of the Doctor Who franchise. So it's as though there was this void that was coming with these two, you know, lions of science fiction, you know, retiring. And but there was still demand for sci-fi programming. And so these three franchises began to capture people's imagination and fill in. So the question going on from there is, as we see how these two franchises have fed off of each other going forward, is what does that mean for the Star Trek franchise? I mean, obviously, I think under Disney's management, Star Wars has advantages from a marketing and a distribution network that is unparalleled. But what does that mean for Star Trek? Is it going to be able to hold its own in this new Star Wars-rich environment? Brian, what do you think?
If it differentiates itself from Star Wars, yeah, it'll probably be fine. If it tries to be Star Wars light, like it's been trying to some degree, with the past two movies, I don't think it's going to go very well.
Yeah, because it will be an inferior copy.
You know, I never believed when people have discussed, you know, which one is better, Star Wars or Star Trek. I've never viewed them that way, because to me, they're so completely unlike.
It's apples and oranges. You can't really compare the two very easily.
No, and I love them both, but for different reasons.
Well, sure. Star Trek is science fiction, like hard science fiction, and Star Wars is science fiction fantasy. So it's
a completely different
genre.
It's swords and sorcerers in space.
Exactly. Star Wars. Yeah. It's fantasy with some space paint on it, basically.
I agree with that. It's just it's a different color paint.
And Star Trek, you know, is definitely more what would be considered hard science fiction, although it isn't always that either. But
sure.
But the point being that if they are going to compete in the same marketplace for the foreseeable future, I think Star Trek has to differentiate itself somehow. I don't know exactly what that is or how they will do it, but I think they have to be different.
Well, so another interesting angle to this is that it's kind of, you have to kind of consider three different series, not just two. It's the Star Wars movies, the Star Trek movies, and the Star Trek television series, which is going to be its own beast. So how is that?
Yeah,
and how are the movies? I mean, because that's another issue between the movies, the Star Trek movies and the Star Trek television series, is they have a similar struggle where the television series, I assume, will want to differentiate itself from the reboot movies. So, you know, now we have all three of these things that are presumably going to be going on at the same time, because we know some of the actors have already signed on for future films.
So you're saying your premise is that the tone and the sort of aim of the ongoing rebooted movies will be different than the new TV show, the Star Trek All Access?
I think so. I think it has to be. And I think CBS, as we've talked about before, it's really hard to understand the relationship between CBS and Paramount and the shows and the movies. But I would imagine that CBS would want to distance themselves in order to have their own marketable product.
Yeah, I would think that. Yeah, I think that's a good premise. I hadn't thought about that, but that does make a lot of sense.
So, Jarrett, you had some thoughts about how the franchises changed, in particular in 1999.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks, Kayla. That's a good question. So maybe it had something to do with the key up to Y2K or something else, and this the way the world was transforming with the development of the internet. But I really think that 1999 was the watershed year for both franchises, because we have The Phantom Menace come out, right? Same time, we also have Deep Space Nine going off the air. And then we have, which I think is most important, we have the movie Galaxy Quest come out. And, there's various theories about what it is that caused the downfall of the Trek TV franchise. Was it that there was just too much material out there? Was it that Enterprise was a misstep? Was it the Voyager was a misstep? But I actually think the most important thing was that Galaxy Quest did this deconstructionist Star Trek movie, which told its own adventure that was great, but also highlighted the franchise in a way that it never had been before. Because a huge part of being a Star Trek fan is not just watching the TV show, it's the fandom experience, which Galaxy Quest just captured beautifully, right? And in fact, J.J. Abrams said in the interviews about the reboot is he said, how do I create a Star Trek movie for audiences that have seen Galaxy Quest? Because that's where it's all deconstructed right there. And I think something that's actually comparable to is the way Austin Powers affected the James Bond franchise, because a lot of the more lighthearted kind of fantastical elements of the Bond franchise just get completely lampooned in Austin Powers. And with the new versions with the Daniel Craig, they said, we can't do that at all. We have to be entirely serious or we'll get compared to this comedy show. And then, of course, Phantom Menace, even though, you know, we were not the first ones on the internet to say that it's not beloved, but despite that, it reinvigorated the Star Wars brand in a way that made it okay to be nostalgic about Star Wars again. I think we take for granted at this point how much Star Wars, how popular it is and how much people can make references to it on TV and whatnot. But in 1999, it was not a particularly popular franchise, right? There'd been some, ever since Return of the Jedi, there'd been some books, there'd been some video games, but it wasn't something that it was necessarily cool to talk about. And it wasn't something that I think people were particularly nostalgic about. You may disagree.
Yeah, I have to disagree with you there, because you're forgetting about the reissue special editions that came out.
Yeah.
Those were huge hits. Those were like, I think every single one of them grossed over $100 million and for movies that were, you know, 20 wow. or 30 years old. They were huge hits, and they reaffirmed to George that he could go back and do the prequel trilogy.
So those came out in 1997, is that?
97, I believe, yeah.
Would that have been part of the catalyst then for getting the Phantom Menace?
No, I mean, I think actually Phantom Menace was in production in 97.
Yeah, it would have to have been.
But it definitely probably made George feel good knowing that, you know, there was definitely a very hungry audience out there ready for the new installment.
The other thing that happened in 97 that some people speculate spurred George into action to do Phantom Menace was the success of the movie Titanic. Because Titanic came along and just destroyed all of the records that Star Wars had set. And I think there was the ego inside of him that said, no, I'm not going to let James Cameron come along and be the master of this domain. I'm going to come back and I'm going to get back on number one. Which, of course, he was not able to do. And then, in fact, in 2009 with Avatar, James Cameron came back and did it again.
But didn't Titanic come out in 97 as well?
Oh, yeah, that's what I said. I think that in terms of spurring George on to the drive for the prequel trilogy, I think Titanic played a huge role in that in terms of his own ego.
Maybe.
Difficult to say. Anyway, so when people talk to you about differences between the franchise, and obviously I think we probably prefer Star Trek because we're more involved in this, what is it that we prefer more about Star Trek to the Star Wars franchise?
Well, I like the harder science fiction elements of it, because that's just the genre that I identify with more, I guess. I mean, I'm happy with the fantasy stuff as well. I like Star Wars quite a bit. I'm a big Star Wars fan, in addition to Star Trek. But I don't know, it's like you said, it's like really hard to compare the two. So when someone says, what's better, Star Trek or Star Wars? Like, I mean, I would probably say Star Trek, but I can't really give a concrete reason, you know, because they're not... It's not like one thing is doing something right and the other one is not.
I've always appreciated simply just how much more canonical material Star Trek has been able to produce. But this is something where the volume is beginning to shift now that there'll be more movies, and then there have also been so many cartoon shows about Star Wars providing new content as well.
So is the holiday special, is the Star Wars holiday special canon?
No. No, George would rather people pretend it doesn't exist.
But it's like we had that Voyager episode Threshold, and that's canon in Star Trek world. So I think the holiday special should be canon in Star Wars world.
We'll have to get a judge's ruling on that.
There are a couple things that came out of the Star Wars holiday special which became canon.
Really? Like what?
The name of Chewbacca's planet, Kashyyyk, comes from the holiday special. And then the character of Boba Fett came from the holiday special.
Yeah, he's in the cartoon, right?
Yeah, he's in the weird cartoon that looks like it was from Mad Magazine.
Boba Fett came from the holiday special?
Yeah, that's where he was introduced.
Whoa. That's just like, that's mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. I knew you were going to say that. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that.
And Threshold only gave us... Oh, wait. Well, the Salamanders. And then, of course, there was Tuvix.
So, you know, a lot of people... There was actually a thread on Reddit the other day where they were talking about Tuvix. And I think some people really... That held a special place in their heart, that episode.
I'll never understand that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we can accept the conceit that the matter transporter can create a beam that dematerializes you in one place and rematerializes you another place. But it's another thing to say that it combines your soul with someone else.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's that scene at the beginning of Motion Picture where the people get beamed onto the Enterprise, like the new Vulcan science officer, and it malfunctions, and he's just this glob of matter that dies immediately. It's like, I think that's what would happen if there was a transporter accident.
Yeah. Or you'd just never rematerialize. Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this soul combination idea.
Yeah, well, you know, the heart of all transporter technology is, of course, merging souls.
Apparently. Anyway, back... Star Wars. We were talking about Star Wars.
Now, something, Brian, you told me once something about George Lucas being a Star Trek fan in the mid-70s.
Yeah, there is an urban legend, and I've never been able to confirm this, so this could be complete nonsense, but apparently after George made a ton of money with American Graffiti, and before he started getting serious about Star Wars, he called Paramount to find out how much it would cost to buy the Star Trek franchise.
And holy cow.
Paramount was making a ton of money syndicating the series and the licensing, yeah, and, you know, everything else, and either quoted a too high a figure or just dismissed it out of hand. I don't know. And like I said, this could be complete nonsense. But I do know that George was a fan. George told Gene once that, and maybe he was just trying to flatter Gene, I have no idea, but he told Gene that when he was writing the script for Star Wars, he would often stop and watch Star Trek reruns.
Oh, that's very flattering. That is very nice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's true, if George was just being nice, but, yeah.
You know, there's that scene in Rod Roddenberry's documentary, Trek Nation, where he goes and visits George Lucas, which is a very endearing scene. And you can tell that Lucas is happy to sit down with Gene Roddenberry's son.
Yeah,
and give him time to talk about the franchise. And there's this cute moment where he presents Lucas with, like, a phaser. And I don't know if it's, like, an actual model from the 1960s or if it's, you know, like, just something that was created new.
It looked like a toy phaser.
It's probably, it's got to have just been a toy. And Lucas says, oh, if you'd given this to me a couple months ago, I would have put it in Revenge of the Sith. And I think he would have.
Yeah, maybe.
Somewhere in the background.
Yeah, well, what was it? In Phantom Menace, when they are at Watto's, his garage or whatever, and they're looking at the different craft he has in the back of his place, if I'm remembering this correctly. There's a bunch of ships just lying there. Like, uh-huh. I guess pod. One of them is the shuttle pod from the Discovery in 2001.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so George was capable of doing that kind of stuff, like, you know, dropping little Easter eggs in there. And, like, what was it, in Phantom Menace, or was it Attack of the Clones, when the ETs are in
the Imperial Center? Phantom Menace. Yeah, there's a group of ETs.
And in Star Trek 2009, R2-D2 makes a cameo appearance.
Right.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Where is R2-D2?
He's, like, flying through... Yeah, at the beginning, he's, like, flying through the debris. If you look really closely, we have an article on Trek Movie.
Oh, okay, that's right.
He's, like, flying through across the view screen.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Interesting. If The Force Awakens is very, 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 very successful, even more than people are predicting, and Star Trek Beyond kind of falls flat with whatever they're doing, what could that mean for a fourth Star Trek movie in the rebooted franchise? How would they change it to make it even more like Star Wars?
Yeah, I think you answered your own question there. I think they'll just be like, it wasn't Star Wars-y and Guardians of the Galaxy-y enough. We need to throw some more random characters in there that do nothing but provide cutesy comic relief.
Oh, you mean like the like Scotty's little alien sidekick?
Yeah, he's fine, but... We don't need Keenzer.
Yeah, I have no problem with Keenzer.
He's fine, but I just don't need more Keenzer. I think there's a good Keenzer to non-Keenzer ratio going on right now.
Yeah.
Well, let's call that Kayla's law.
Yeah, the Kienzer ratio.
Yeah,
Kayla's Kienzer law.
Mm-hmm. It's a good balance of Kienzer right now. It's enough.
Yeah, I mean, we can have a separate discussion about what would, you know, what it will require financially for there to be a fourth movie with this group, but that's like a separate discussion altogether.
Yeah.
I think it has to
gross more than Into Darkness did.
Oh,
both
sure.
Both domestically and worldwide.
I mean, if I had to guess, obviously I have nothing to base this on, but if I had to guess right now, I would guess that it will gross more than Into Darkness did.
Yes, I would tend to think so as well. I think so too. Mm-hmm. I mean, without having seen anything, I'm going to put my trust in Simon Pegg, and I think we're going to have a fun... I think we got a fun movie coming up. I really do.
And Simon Pegg and Doug Jung and Justin Lin, all of them.
Yeah. I mean, I feel good about it.
Yeah, I think it'll be the best of the three.
But we'll have something to go on when we see the first trailer, which hopefully will drop soon.
Yeah. You know, and there are those who speculate, and, you know, when this airs, we may already know this, there are those who speculate that the first trailer for Star Trek Beyond will happen in front of... Star Trek The Force Awakens.
Star Wars.
Right.
Yep.
Star Wars The Force Awakens. Whoops, sorry. They're so similar.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance it's going to.
Yeah. I think that would be great. I think that'd be a smart move.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't cross promote there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it makes no sense not to. Especially since there's been no publicity about the movie whatsoever up to this point. You need to announce it in a big way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I hope they do, because they've fallen flat on some opportunities that they've had to make big announcements related to the film. So I hope that they've been just waiting until they have more to show us. And that, like, once they give us the first teaser, that I hope they just hit the ground running in terms of promotion for the film. Because Star Wars promotion has been unimaginably huge.
It's been perfect.
I think it's almost a little too much, to be honest.
It's reaching a saturation point.
That for me like a day after it started.
See, to me, the saturation has not been the stuff that's come from Disney about Star Wars. It's been all the people on YouTube and the news or whatever who realize they get more traffic when they put Star Wars in the title. But, you know, that's my fault that I choose to consume media that has Star Wars in the title. I think actually in terms of the content that Disney has released, it's been perfect, right? Because there are so many plot points that we just don't still know. And that's one of the things that spurs the additional dialogue about the film is like, ooh, why isn't Luke Skywalker on the poster? Oh, is Luke really the bad guy? Ooh, who's going to die? What's going to happen with this? Who's this guy? Is he a good guy or a bad guy or whatever? And I think they're doing a really good job of dispersing the right amount of information at the right time. And I hope that the people at Paramount are paying attention and they'll replicate that. Because something, and we were talking about this right before we turned on the recording, but the Batman v Superman : Dawn of Justice trailer dropped yesterday, so the 2nd of December, we're recording this on the 3rd, and I think they revealed way too much information, where there's no mystery about what the story is going to be, and whereas with The Force Awakens, I think they've done a great job with that.
I didn't even know Doomsday was going to be in the movie, and I would have preferred to have been surprised.
That would have been a nice third act surprise, wouldn't it have been, Brian?
Yeah, it really would have. I didn't need to see that. I thought we were entering an age where they weren't going to start giving away everything in the trailers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really think there's a happy medium, though. Because, it's fair. It used to be like a trailer was basically every plot point in the film. And then when you saw it, it was like, oh, well, I saw that in the trailer. And now it's like the opposite, where it's just like random shots of sweeping... You know, overhead shots of things, with an ominous voice speaking over the top of it, saying very vague lines of dialogue, like
"you that's supposed to sound will really important,"
remember, or something. Yeah. And it's just like, I have no idea what this film is about. Like Star Wars is the king of that, but they kind of can be at this point because everyone's going to go see the film because it's Star Wars,
because the brand is so strong.
But I have no, there is literally no. Clues. There are no clues whatsoever about what the film is about. I mean, very minimal clues about who the characters are, but there's nothing about the plot. And I would prefer like a little bit of a teaser of what the motivation of the story is going to be. So I don't know. I think there should be a happy medium between those two kinds of trailers. But I imagine the Star Trek trailer will be more like the Star Wars trailer, where sweeping shots of things and some battle scenes and ominous dialogue.
I agree that there should be a happy medium, but for this particular Star Wars movie, I think it's actually good that we know next to
nothing. It's probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like not knowing anything. I mean, it's cool to see pictures of Harrison Ford dressed as Han and stuff like that, Chewie and the new characters and all that's really cool, but I don't really need to know much about them before I go in. I want to be blown away. I'm not one of those people that needs to read every spoiler out there.
No, yeah. For sure. I try to avoid them like the plague. But, I mean, that's because we're going to see the movie either way.
Right.
Regardless of the plot.
Okay, so here's a question for the two of you. If you had a friend who was a Star Wars fan, who knows that you're a Star Trek fan and wants to learn more about the franchise, what would be the first episode or couple episodes you might show them to pull them into the franchise?
So are we talking just the television series, not the movies?
Yeah, just the television shows.
I guess I'd probably have to go something out of Deep Space Nine, something from the Dominion War. It's got a lot of space battle action going on.
Oh, sure, because it's really action-oriented. There's one episode of that, one of my favorite Deep Space Nines. It's called Rocks and Shoals, where the Defiant crew is trapped on a planet with a Jem'Hadar crew, and they basically have to survive. And there's all kinds of, you know, chicanery and backdoors dealing, and the Vorta tries to do, and there's some good Garrick moments. That is a fantastic episode. That would be a good thing to do for a Star Wars fan. I agree with that.
Nice.
Brian, what do you think?
Best of both worlds.
Oh, okay. I think, classic.
Their first true battle with the Borg, and Picard being assimilated, and the Battle of Wolf 359, and there's just so much going on in that two-parter. Even though, obviously, part one, in many ways, is far superior to part two.
Yeah, it is.
It's still an epic storyline. And for a Star Wars fan who likes a lot of action and laser beams and stuff like that, I think it's a perfect choice.
The other thing I would add...
It's Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, it is at the height of his powers.
Yep.
And I would also add something that episode excels at is the music. And I think the musical score and the emotion that communicates in Star Wars is such an iconic part of its success. And a lot of the music in Star Wars, the TV series, is a little bland, but not in that one. I actually think they won an Emmy for that episode. Yeah. Star Trek, sorry.
In Star Trek.
This is going to happen a lot.
Thanks for keeping me honest. I mean,
with you, though.
Yeah.
With the music. Most of the shows from TNG on tend to have very bland scores. Yeah, so that Best of Both Worlds definitely stands out in that regard.
Yeah.
Well, if only we could have John Williams scoring all of our favorite series.
Or Jerry Goldsmith.
Or Jerry Goldsmith, sure.
One of the two. So, actually, the episode that I would show as a Star Wars fan to get him into Trek is, and it's actually, I was watching it earlier today, is this episode Gambit from the 7th season of TNG. It's a two-parter, and it's... You know, it starts off in a bar, which, you know, like a cantina type of thing. And then there's this adventure of Picard and Riker getting swept up by these mercenaries and the Enterprise chasing them. And it's most of the Star Trek stuff. It's either intersections with like diplomats or scientists, which is great and we love. But this is like the only real episode where they're fighting space pirates. And so I think that might be appealing to Star Wars fans.
I think space pirates are appealing to everyone.
That is true.
Totally.
Yes, I agree. If there's one thing we can all agree on, it's space pirates and dinosaurs.
I was just going to say something stupid, like, why is there not a show about pirates and dinosaurs in space?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
The pirates could ride the dinosaurs, or they could fight the dinosaurs, maybe?
Yeah.
They could have pirate flags on their spaceships.
There is that episode of Voyager where they find like the evolved dinosaurs. I can't remember what that was called.
Yeah. There's even an episode of Doctor Who that's like that too.
Oh, okay.
I think that seems to be like a science fiction trope, is like, if only reptiles had evolved instead of humans, and this is a planet where that happened.
Yeah. You know, there's actually an episode of the old school Doctor Who where they show how the dinosaurs were killed.
Like by a meteor?
No, it's like some spaceship that a bunch of aliens are on, and there was this very unpopular companion named Adric who gets stuck on it, and he accidentally crashes the spaceship into the Earth, and that's how the dinosaurs die.
That's amazing. And good thing you did, because humans probably would not have evolved had the dinosaurs not died out.
Sure,
so it's a paradox. Seriously.
Yeah,
it's a paradox.
It is. this character in Doctor Who's name was Adric, and he was I guess he'd be the Wesley Crusher analog to the Doctor Who franchise, and so when they sent him off with a bang. And it was,
but he's like a bumbling dinosaurs. Wesley Crusher. Like, Wesley Crusher never would have accidentally crashed a spaceship into a planet.
No, not at all. Not at all.
He's like the Jar Jar / Wesley Crusher love child.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go. Yeah, and Jar Jar's kind of, you know, he's kind of reptilian. I guess he's an amphibian.
That's quite an image.
Anyway, we're kind of digressing.
I'm imagining Jar Jar Binks in the Wesley Rainbow sweater.
I might like him more if he wore the Wesley Rainbow sweater.
I think I might put together that image in Photoshop just for the show notes on our website.
Make it so.
All right.
Okay. Now, Kayla, did you want to talk about the Wikipedia page?
Oh, yeah. So as we were chatting, did you know that there is a Wikipedia page entitled Comparison of Star Trek and Star Wars?
No, I did not know that, but I'm going to call it right now.
I might say that it's not very extensive, surprisingly, and could benefit from, I think, a lot of your insight.
Oh.
You could imagine this being the longest Wikipedia entry. It's quite short, actually. There's a few paragraphs about differences, saying that, you know, Star Trek was only a television series to the beginning, and like Star Wars was movies. Like, it's not very insightful. Some similarities. Here's how this paragraph on similarities begins. Aside from having the word star in their respective titles, the two franchises also share many similarities. So you can see the sort of the depth of this analysis. there are a couple of things that are like neat little gems in here, but again, like stuff that a lot of people know, like I think I've read this before. When Gene Roddenberry was honored at a Star Trek convention late in his life, congratulatory letter from George Lucas was presented by an actor dressed as Darth Vader.
Oh, interesting.
That's a cute thing.
That was at the 25th. That was at the 25th anniversary convention, I think, at the Shrine Auditorium.
Oh, nice.
And there's a bunch of examples of these where the two were honoring each other, at ceremonies where Star Trek and Star Wars is kind of opposed or combined.
I think one of the best examples that I'm aware of was when Lucas was inducted into the American Film Institute. You know, they have this big gala for him, and the guy they got to open it was William Shatner, and he sang "My Way" by the Frank Sinatra song, I think it is, and it opens up, and you know, people see it's William Shatner, and they laugh and they applaud, and he says, "These conventions sure are great, aren't they?" You know, and everyone laughs at that. And he says, "George, congratulations for your success. May I call you George?" And, you know, in the audience, Lucas nods and laughs. And then he says, "Oh, great. You can call me Mr. Shatner." And then, you know, it ends with some stormtroopers coming and dragging him off. So I thought that was good.
That's great. I think I've seen that video, but it's been a while. We should throw that up in the show notes, too, because that's worth watching.
Yeah.
That's our Bill.
Yeah. Oh, Bill.
So I think one way that the Star Trek franchise negatively influenced Star Wars, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying about the timeline, is in The Phantom Menace, I think one of the reasons people don't like it is because it's a little too Star Trek-ized, and there's a little bit too much technobabble, and specifically when there's the reference to the midi-chlorians as like what causes the Force to happen, I think that was a unintended consequences of Star Trek's popularity through the 90s.
Yeah. Maybe.
I don't know. That's a bit of a stretch. But
just because there hadn't been any like technobabble like that in Star Wars before. Maybe it's a stretch. I just remember when I was in the theater, I looked at that and said, that's a little bit too much Star Trek.
No,
right there.
No, I totally agree. Like most people, I think, would agree that Star Wars isn't about that, and it was totally unnecessary to introduce the midichlorians thing.
Yeah,
but I think it's more like it's indicative of a bigger systemic issue with the Star Wars franchise at the time, rather than like it was directly responsible for.
Sure.
I don't feel like George was watching TNG and going and being affected by it. I just don't see George is very much his own man in how he created his universe. There's very little outside influence outside of maybe Joseph Campbell and Frank Herbert in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, and if you hadn't mentioned Frank Herbert, I would have insisted on that, because it's definitely once you see Dune, it's hard to not think about Dune when you see Tatooine.
Yeah, the most remarkable thing about Star Wars is that Frank Herbert did not sue George Lucas. There is so much. Oh my God, there's so much stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Luke Skywalker is...
Paul Atreides. Sarlacc. Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe Anakin Skywalker is, but like, you know, they talk about spice freighters and like, there's all sorts of, I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could look at it as an homage, and you could also look at it as, you know, a little more than that.
Sure. There's a fine line between brilliance and stupidity, to quote the movie Spinal Tap. Okay, let's ask this question. If you could take one character from the Star Wars franchise and insert him into Star Trek, who do you think would be the best for that?
Well, where in the franchise would you insert them?
Wherever you want to. Wherever you want to.
Mm. Ooh. Wow. That's a good one.
I can think of the worst.
Oh, okay. Let's hear it. Worst.
Well, obviously Jar Jar Binks.
Okay, yeah.
And I would insert him in the episode Threshold.
Oh, sure. Yeah. He
and maybe like they instead of turning into salamanders, they turn into
to Gungans.
Gungans.
Yeah.
That now you would really have the worst episode ever.
And there can be like some tie-in with the Star Wars holiday special as well. Then it'd be the ultimate.
Then yeah, that would really do it. Wow.
Okay, but best. Let me think about that. Okay, a really good question.
No, I think the person who'd fit the best is the Admiral Akbar character. I think he would fit really well in the Star Trek franchise.
Where?
You mean it's a trap?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think, you know, him. There's always admirals that Picard is dealing with. I think it'd be cool if if you know, in one episode he had to answer to Admiral Akbar.
I think Akbar is in the new movie, by the way.
I think he is too. There was that.
What? Really?
Yeah.
I missed this completely.
There's a shot of someone from his species in one of the background of one of the scenes.
Ah.
And so if it could be him, it could be, you know, just another, you know.
That'd be cool if he was in it.
I would love that.
It would be cool.
I would love that. I think he's terrific. And he's, you know, when I was a kid growing up, in the dark ages before the internet, you know, my brothers and I, we'd make that joke to each other. We'd say, oh, it's a trap. And we thought we were the only ones who did it. And then the internet came along and realized, oh, no, wait, everyone made a joke about that line. Yeah, and of course he would have to make reference to that if he showed up in Star Trek.
So, favorite Star Wars character in the Star Trek universe. Jeez.
I think it's hard because the Star Trek universe is so extensive and it's like so many people could fit into different places.
Well, maybe the inverse would be a better question then. Who from all of the collected Star Trek franchise would fit in the, you know, in the three or six canonical films that we have in the Star Wars franchise?
Gul Dukat, maybe?
Oh, yeah. He'd be fun. He'd be a good villain. Yeah.
He'd be good.
Mm-hmm.
You could totally see him hanging out with like Palpatine.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, well done, Kayla. You pulled that out of thin air. It's very impressive. Okay, would a Vulcan make a good Jedi while we're in that area?
Yeah. Oh gosh, totally.
I think so.
They both wear robes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, obvious parallels.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, and Vulcans don't fall prey to like hate and
sure, so they'd be presumably more resistant to the dark side. But here's the other question: could they do a mind meld or a neck pinch via the Force?
Sure,
I would say
yes. Darth Vader could choke you.
Yeah, why not? Why couldn't he? Why couldn't
mind meld? I don't know about mind meld because maybe like brainwaves can't travel through air.
Okay,
but totally neck pinch.
Yeah, there was a moment once where President Obama used the phrase Jedi mind meld, and he kind of got in a little bit of trouble on the internet afterwards, but I appreciate that both franchises have been so popular that they've risen to presidential politics.
But you know, right, I just
and we all know, and Barack Obama is a big Star Trek a big Star Trek fan.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's that awesome picture of him and Nichelle Nichols while flashing the Vulcan
salute.
Is one of the greatest pictures related to Star Trek ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That show, if Gene were alive to have seen that, he would be blown away.
Yeah.
That his TV show got into the Oval Office of the United States.
And I imagine Barack Obama's not the first president to watch Star Trek either, so.
No, probably not.
But I just thought of something, and I want to correct myself. talking about the mind meld thing, because there's that episode of the original series where Spock mind melds a guy like through a wall.
That's right.
He also
on the Ultimate Computer.
No, in the Ultimate Computer.
There's a scene. It's the Doomsday Machine. Doomsday Machine. There's a scene where a ship full of Vulcans gets destroyed and Spock reacts.
No, the immunity syndrome.
The immunity syndrome. Okay, thank you. I was wrong. Dang it. Okay, the immunity syndrome. And there are those who've said that when Obi-Wan Kenobi does the same thing, when he says, I heard millions of voices cry out and were suddenly silenced. It's like an echo of that.
It could be. If what George says is true, George was watching TOS when he was writing Star Wars. So who knows? Also, they're in the Omega Glory. Spock gets one of the natives to hand him, I think, his communicator.
Eye
contact with her. Like, gets into, like, a mind link through eye contact and basically manipulates her that way. So it is possible to do a wireless mind meld.
Wireless mind meld. You would hope so. You would hope so. Okay.
Spooky action at a distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, would a Wookiee make a good member of Starfleet?
I think so.
Yeah.
Wait, can he communicate with the other members of Starfleet? Would he
have a universal translator?
Yeah, or because Han can understand him.
That's true.
But no one else can, I guess? Yeah. Or, no, I guess Leia can understand him?
I don't think anybody understands
Chewie but Han.
Yeah.
Han pretends to? Or he does?
No, there's times when he translates him, like when... Chewbacca comes back with C-3PO's body and on Bespin, and Leia says, "What happened to him?" And Chewbacca growls, and he says, "Oh, you found him in a garbage chute or something like that." So he does translate.
Found him in a junk pile. Yeah.
Junk pile. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. And of course, 3PO understands him.
Oh yeah. Right. Well, if people could speak with him, then sure. I don't see why not. But otherwise, that could be a problem.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. He'd need a universal translator.
Yeah, sure. But him and Worf could compare sashes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there'd be the Bandolier brothers.
Can you imagine the battles those two would have in the holodeck?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That would be sweet.
Have somebody, you know, he could, yeah. Worf would finally meet his match, basically.
Yeah. Next best character from Star Wars to bring over to Star Trek is definitely Chewbacca in a Klingon episode.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep.
I'd pay to see that.
Versus Chewie.
In all-out war. and pulling the strings is Emperor Palpatine and his new attaché, Gul Dukat, who, of course, would inevitably betray Palpatine and have to get killed.
Of course.
Yeah. Which is good. Palpatine needs to be betrayed. So.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. I mean, that's kind of his thing, right?
Yeah.
Right. How about Vader hanging out with the Borg?
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I think he would find them boring.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's motivated for a specific purpose, and they're just like, no, assimilate everything, and they kind of have a pure goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The franchise they always reminded me of more was Doctor Who, because there's the Cybermen who are basically the same, but not as but not as interesting or as.
No, they're like well a kitschy created. Version
yeah.
of the Borg.
Yep. Yeah. Of course, you could probably say that about a lot of things in the Doctor Who franchise, that it's the kitschy version of blank.
It's true. Mm-hmm. And they don't care. They like mm-hmm. that.
Okay, here's another question. Would Quark go into business with Jabba the Hutt?
Quark will go into business with anyone.
Yeah.
He'll make him money.
Although he shies away from danger more than your average shady individual. So I don't know if he'd really want to be mixed up with Jabba.
I think he'd be a little afraid.
I think he would be afraid, but he wouldn't realize that Jabba was such a bad guy until he already got into dealings with him, and then he'd just be, kind of screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I think he would have to, at some point in that episode, quote, rule of acquisition number 58, which states, the riskier the road, the greater the reward.
There you go.
Very good.
That's one of the only rules of acquisition that gets quoted in more than one episode.
Wow, fun fact.
Wait, I was wrong on the number. It was 62, not 58. Sorry.
What's rule number 47?
Rule number 47 is never trust a man wearing a better suit than your own, which would not apply to Jabba because he is a gastropod who's always naked.
Oh, that's great.
You could say it's birthday suit.
Yeah, that's better. True. Yeah. Yeah, Jabba is, it does not conform to human expectations of modesty.
Yeah, that man wears no pants. And neither do
Ferengi.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Which actually never made sense to me, but that's its own thing.
Yeah.
Let's see. But I think if Quark and Lando Calrissian went into business together, that would, or got, were like in competing business with each other, I think that would be a fun adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Well, I think this is something we could go on and on and on about, but I think we've probably, it's run its course for now.
Well, the big question though, right, is whether or not the new Star Wars franchise will benefit Star Trek or hurt it in the long run in terms of what's coming out now with the new films, what's going to happen to the films after Beyond, will they exist, and what's going to happen with the television show.
I think the net result will be positive.
So do I.
It depends. There's two ways to say that. Will the net result be positive from a business standpoint? Yes. Will the net result be positive from the fans' perspective creatively? That I don't know.
But yeah, it's really impossible to say it's beyond. Beyond.
Yeah.
Beyond.
What's gonna beyond beyond Star Trek, Bed Bath, and Beyond.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it's fun to speculate about this stuff. That's all.
Yeah. No, that's what the internet was created to do.
Yep.
Okay.
Was it Rick Berman? I saw Rick Berman in an interview. He said the internet was created for two reasons: one for pornography, and the other for Star Trek fans to talk to one another.
It's true. It's true. I mean the internet was I would add the military, because that's really where the internet started. I had a friend in the Marines who said the first time he sent an email was during Operation right. Desert Storm. So we have sex, violence, and Star Trek, the three pillars of human existence.
And on that note.
Hey,
I was about to say, we can't top that. We can't top that.
No. Okay, well, we have not seen the movie yet. We all have our tickets, though. We're looking forward to seeing it in a little bit. We'll probably make mention of it and discuss it, even if it's only just in passing, on a future episode. But we appreciate you accompanying us on this journey. And we look forward to future voyages together in this shuttle pod.
And make sure to get in touch. We want to hear what you guys think about Star Wars and Star Trek, about what we talked about today, about what you'd like to hear us talk about in the future. So be sure to tweet us at TrekMovie, leave comments on our website at TrekMovie.com, and check us out on Facebook as well. And you can also get in touch with the three of us individually. We're all on Twitter as well. I'm at Kayla I.
I'm at Whitleypedia.
I'm at BDrew73. And if you have ideas for show topics, please feel free to offer them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, that just about concludes the latest episode of the Shuttle Pod. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
See you next time.
Bye, friends.
Guy walks into the doctor's office. The doctor tells him you need an operation. The guy says, I want a second opinion. The doctor says, okay, you're ugly too, but boom, boom.